Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One. Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, Martin Cove, you know him as Kreese, is going to be joining us. Also, at the top of the show, I found a message in a bottle when I was walking on the beach 2 weeks ago. It had a note in it. I found the bottle. I busted open. I got the note. It had a phone number on it. And we talked to the person that put the note in the bottle and cast it into the ocean. So that's interesting. First, I'll tell you about Tommy John. I always say push yourself, seek discomfort, throw yourself in a freezing swimming pool. Good. But then get real comfortable with Tommy John after that. Start every morning with Tommy John underwear. I'm wearing mine right now. They don't have customers. They have converts. Once you go with Tommy John, you will not go back to whatever you wore before Tommy John. And that's it. I have my Tommy John. I haven't thrown away my other stuff yet because it was expensive, but it just sits in the drawer. And when I pack my Tommy John. And every day before I head out of the house, Tommy John, man. They do the undershirts very well. They do the loungewear very nicely. But the underwear, man, that is the best. It's the best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free. Guaranteed, right, Dawson?
Get that much more comfortable at TommyJohn.com/Adam and save 15% on your first order. Save 15% right now at TommyJohn.com/Adam. TommyJohn.com/Adam.
Well, Martin Cove discusses Rambo 2, discusses Karate Kid, young Sylvester Stallone, and working with him, and so much more. Even going over to Tom Laughlin, Billy Jack's house back in the day and playing tennis every weekend. Lots of old-time Hollywood stories with Kreese. First, I'll tell you about Geico. How do you banish high rates on car insurance? Switch to Geico during Geico-ween. Folks at Geico have been working even harder to cast out high rates and craft just the right policy for your family. Switching to Geico isn't scary, especially when they could brew up spellbinding savings just for you. So get a quote today at geico.com and see just how much you could be saving. No eye of newt needed. Happy Geico-ween, everyone.
For just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat. Stuff and booze. Adam's monthly nut. Adam's monthly nut.
I got good news and bad news, folks. Good news, a new month of Adam's Monthly Nut has arrived at CorollaDrinks.com. Bad news, we no longer have the offerings from Vinny Tortorich and the fine folks at Chateau Spill. Fear not, you can get more bottles of the stain-removing sorcery at HateStains.com. And for more of Vinny's delicious nut butter, go to NSNGFoods.com. A big thank you to Vinny and Hate Stains for September's Adam's Monthly Nut. From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, and brought to you by Bet Online, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, from Cobra Kai and The Karate Kid, Martin Cove. And from the upcoming film Cage Fighter, Worlds Collide, Chuck Liddell. With Balt Bryan on sound effects, Jeff Cesario with the sports, I fill in on news, and Dr. Drew stops by. And now, mercy is for the weak. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on. Just a minute to get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for sharing. Gina Grad is on a top secret project, so Dawson's going to do the news. Drew, I asked to hang with us for a couple of reasons. I'll explain that in a second. First, good day, Ball Brian.
What I do now.
So Dr. Drew is here as a couple of subjects. We got the president's health and reading between the lines and sorting out some of the facts when it comes to some of the information that we've all heard over the last couple of days. Drew does a very nice job of adding a lot of clarity to that. Also, as we tape this, we just found out that Eddie Van Halen had passed away. And Drew says he knows him a little better than he let on.
Which, fellow Pasadena native?
He is. And I've got a long history with Eddie.
And also, so Drew grew up in Pasadena. Eddie at least played Pasadena. That was their circuit. I don't know if he grew up in Pasadena or Monrovia or like around there.
Yeah, they're a Pasadena band, but right. It's all sort of that area.
And played shows that you went to in high school
so
and things
I,
like that?
In La Cañada, my sons were Gladiator football players, which is the junior All-American football. And we had a blood drive at the high school. At La Cañada High School. And I went in to give blood, and I was in the cafeteria lying there, and I'm looking at this kind of proscenium and a clock above the proscenium. I'm thinking, I have been in this room before. This is, you know, about 10 years ago. And I had a complete, like, flashback to 1973. Somebody invited me to the prom at La Cañada High School, band playing on that stage, Van Halen.
Well, this is very interesting because I know – Snotty Scotty and the Hankies
yes.
played your prom.
Yes, they did.
Who, look, some could argue were bigger than Van Halen.
At the time.
Others could make an argument for Van Halen. I don't want to get mired in that.
We had
no. I mean, the history
I think
will show
had,
that Snotty Scotty and the Hankies
sure.
may have been a bigger band. Again, I'm not here to get mired in that argument. That'll go on in perpetuity. But I always knew that Drew's prom was Snotty Scotty and the Hankies.
And I believe we have Blue's image. Too.
Blue's image as well. Rod, Captain
yes.
Rod, upon your mystery ship. So, but I also knew he saw Van Halen, but I was trying to put it in some sort of context because
yep.
I knew it wasn't his prom, but
nope.
you were invited to someone else's prom.
To a La Cañada High School prom.
So that was...
And at the time, there was a Wurlitzer organ with this swirling speaker they had, and I didn't like it. It always bothered me. Mm-hmm. And so apparently looking at Van Halen history, they had an organ player for a while.
Yeah. So that was the very early days of David Lee Roth and Van Halen.
No David Lee Roth that
oh,
part.
No.
No. He
oh,
came up 3 or 4 years later.
That's why they were
later.
Playing proms.
Yeah,
that was
right.
pre-David Lee Roth.
Pre-David Lee Roth.
Interesting.
Eddie Van Halen there, not David Lee Roth.
Could you tell he was a great guitar player?
You could tell it could potentially be a great band. Yeah, you could tell there were musicians involved. You know, and they weren't playing pap for the crowd.
Right.
They were musicians.
So,
Eddie had a long history of alcoholism and smoking.
Mm-hmm.
And so he died of head and neck cancer, he thinks he got it from holding a metal guitar pick in his mouth. Let me disavow that. Let me disabuse you of that notion. You get it from alcohol, tobacco, and HPV.
Mm.
So this is a chance to talk about HPV too. Michael Douglas has this same cancer. And you can get a vaccine against this. So get the damn HPV vaccine, everybody. We're seeing a marked uptick in head and neck cancer in males because of HPV. And then if you drink and smoke on top of that, then you pretty much are going to get it.
Well,
two questions for Drew on that subject. When you say head and neck cancer, is that brain cancer? Is that esophageal cancer?
No, his went to the brain. We're talking about really pharynx, larynx, tongue, the back of the throat. And people say throat cancer. We say head and neck because it descends into the neck and it goes up into the head. You know, so
I'll say this. I drink a little, I smoke a little, but I swore off eating pussy years ago.
I know
so
that
you'll
about
be happy.
You. I know that
to know
before
that
HPV became a big problem.
Yes, yes. I was early to that.
Yeah, you
to
were.
That party.
Yeah.
So Eddie gone.
Well, it wasn't really a party.
Eddie seemed pretty complex. And troubled in many ways.
But the nicest guy you
really?
Ever, ever want to meet. Everybody will tell you that about him, and I'm here to tell you that's true.
Really?
Would David
say that?
Sammy Hagar would say that?
Well, but he would have – when he drank, you know, a lot of people I treated that when they drank, they were not so cool. And so that's when people get – they put off people is when they're –
No,
I
know.
I don't
but
hold
the,
that
the,
against them.
I know, but the math is, you know, this guy was a monster when he drank. But if he drank all the time, then,
well, then you're in trouble.
Do the math.
Well, then
right.
you're in trouble, yeah.
So he was a great musician. I'll call him complex. And you knew him a little more off the air than we'd ever really
yeah.
sort of talked about.
Yeah.
Is that – treating him?
Yes, that's about all I'm comfortable saying.
Okay,
yes.
So
but yeah, and Bob Forrest knew him pretty well, and I got to know him a little bit, and I just thought he was a great guy, and a great musician.
Well, definitely a great musician.
And whatever, whenever I heard about conflicts and stuff, I'm thinking, eh, it's the alcoholism, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you know, look, the biggest example that I know of is Rodney King. Rodney King was the nicest human I've ever met, except when he drank. And when he drank, it just turned him into a monster.
Yeah. And we've all been around a few of those people, good drunks, bad drunks.
You had a guy that would run down the hall screaming. Remember that guy in Mexico or whatever it was?
Yeah, Rudy.
Rudy, yeah.
Well, the problem is I didn't really know about blackout drinking and how that affected certain people, where they would have a completely separate life.
Well, then their personality just completely – they're on drugs and their personality completely changes.
No, but what I'm saying is capable of drinking to some point where then later on in that night you could do incredible things, mostly horrific things, and then wake up the next day. And it was – I would think it in a way – all those stories about the werewolf and the Count Dracula and stuff, those were based on blackout drinking, like stop me before I turn into this thing and haunt the night.
One that was actually consciously done on alcoholism was Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Oh,
that
right.
was actually about alcoholism.
Right. So, and then the next day you just wake up and your clothes are tattered and you don't know what happened.
Yep.
Yes, Brian.
I've never thought about this before, but since we have the expert in the room, Drew, is the good drunk, bad drunk thing, the thing where you have some booze and become out of control or you black out or whatever it is that an indicator of alcoholism? Is it correlated in any way?
Blacking out is. How alcohol affects you is not necessarily. I mean, there are some people that are exquisitely sensitive to benzodiazepines and alcohol and would have sort of all kinds of personality and emotional changes with low levels of exposure. But blacking out suggests a certain kind of a relationship with alcohol that's not normal. If you black out more than a couple times, it's like, oh yeah, that's this. That's
a couple
alcoholism.
Times. Why is the bar so low?
Yeah, come on, Drew.
Well, because there's drinking games in college that make people black out. You know what I mean? People are not drinking on their own, and they're sort of forced to drink kind of thing.
Drew has a note in front of him. The note. I'm glad we'll do a little Love Line episode here, but the note is from a young lady. And it was a note that I discovered.
When you gave up on the going down on ladies?
It was a note.
Wrote you a little dissertation about that?
This was a note in a bottle.
Oh.
This is literally a note in a bottle.
This was a cry for help.
And it was cast into the sea.
You and found it on the beach?
I discovered it on the beach.
That's
right. I discovered it.
And when she let it go, was she like in New Zealand or Bali or?
It took, I'll explain more. It took needle nose pliers to extricate it from the bottle.
Wow.
And the note in the bottle, which I found washed up on the beach about 2 weeks ago, reads this way. Go ahead, Drew.
I want to just let go of who I was trying to make myself be, but reality is I am who I'm supposed to be. Nobody can stop me. I'm going to stop pleasing people. It's time to please myself. Fuck everybody who tries to take my energy when I'm full of energy. To whomever reads or finds this, don't hold back. Your life is beautiful. You got this, Celine, with a heart.
So there's also a phone number on it. So I told Chris, why don't we call Celine?
Adam, your life is beautiful.
I know. And see.
Let go of it.
And see how this works.
Brian, Adam's such a people pleaser, too. You notice that?
He's tired.
Gotta stop that.
Tired of right pleasing. Person. Yeah, so I swore off eating pussy. I'm tired. Tired of trying to please people. Now I'm going to blow myself.
There's some sort of butterfly effect going on. Like someone just down the beach was supposed to get that bottle, like a really good, sweet, like wholesome person. But the wind
come on now, come on.
So we'll talk. So Chris contacted her, and we'll talk to her. I'm curious. I want to know about this random life.
Yeah.
Also,
how she's doing,
Drew. I was talking to him about. He was sort of telling us the nuts and the bolts of the presidential COVID situation and sort of how the news portrays it. So what are some of the things we could learn as lay people when we're watching the news and they're talking about medical things of this?
So whenever you hear something reported medically, know that they don't know what they're talking about. It's you're not getting the whole story. Just think about what happens when a 27-year-old is hospitalized in a mental health setting. They're exhausted. It's exhaustion. It's dehydration. They're dehydrated. No, they're not. So I'm always used to reading between the lines on what the publicist says, what the doctor says about somebody who is hospitalized or in trouble medically. In this case, I got almost everything I needed to know exactly what was going on, and I was shocked to see the press obsessing about whether or not he was on supplemental O2. What is the one thing you see in every television show as long as there's been a television when somebody's in a hospital?
They have what, the little nostril
They have the thing in their nose. They have O2 in their nose.
All right. So this is – hold on, Drew. Don't get worked up. But this is interesting, which is, of course, I just watched the news as a layperson, and they I kept hearing he was on supplemental oxygen. That is not a mild case. He was on oxygen. And – of course, because we're lay people, I wasn't thinking ventilator, but I was thinking if you're on oxygen, that is not a mild case. And I was going along for that ride, but there's a difference between supplemental oxygen and what you call like a
high flow oxygen or positive pressure oxygen. If he were on high flow O2 or desaturating badly, they should have asked, what was his O2 saturation? Was it 82? Was it 92? And oftentimes, doctors will just put the O2 on just because that's what we do in a hospital. If you measured the O2 saturation of every flu patient, they would desaturate. And if you were hospitalized with the flu, don't you think you'd have the little cannula in your nose? Yes, you would. So that meant nothing. And their obsession about it to me, and now people are accusing the doctors of lying. I don't think the doctor knew whether he was on O2 or not because it's such an inconsequential thing. The nurses just sometimes just stick it on board when they're desaturating. So he was like, he was lying. No. Here's the question. Did he have high flow O2? No. Did he have positive pressure O2 like a nasal BiPAP? No, he did not. What they didn't ask was, what did his chest x-ray look like and what did his CAT scan look like? Because they gave only a brief description of that. That would have been very useful information. Mm-hmm. That is the only thing they didn't tell us in detail. Otherwise, I knew exactly what was going on from beginning to end. There was not one point I said, hey, I wish they'd tell me more. They gave him the Regeneron. They had an O2 and a CAT scan with some sort of fluffy infiltrate. I would have liked some more detail on that. He desaturated a little bit. He got better after Regeneron. They gave him the remdesivir. His fevers went away. They put him on some dexamethasone on the way out the door, which is an aggressive move, but a move that doctors are making more and more now with mild cases. And he got kind of inflated from that. Brian can address what it's like to be on dexamethasone. It makes you high.
What's inflated? Speeds you up?
Speeds you up and makes you flush and feel big.
It literally inflates you. You get like moon face.
Yeah, you get that too if you want it long enough.
I had the moon face in 2009.
But you can get manic.
Drew and I were talking before the show. I was on dexamethasone off and on for 10, 11 years.
Yeah, it's a rough drug. And but the other thing that worries me is that on the other side of it, when people, particularly when people are very sped up and sort of high, he said it, I've never felt this good in 20 years. Oh. That's how you feel on Decadron.
Oh, is that what that
yeah,
is?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Well, Drew, the only side effect I ever felt from my Avastin infusions was from the Decadron, dexamethasone, they gave me beforehand, small dose, but still, it would keep me up at night. Yep. I couldn't sleep. Yep. I had to take Ambien. Like, I was wired. Like,
it's wired. That's
my
right.
My infusion was at 10 a.m.
Yep, you're wired.
By bedtime, I was, you know,
it's a long-acting medicine. It's a powerful medicine. It's a good medicine, and it should be used more frequently. I think we'll see it more frequently earlier in COVID. Mr. Trump's treatment was a model for how everybody should be treated, and I suspect one day it sort of will be a standard of care, that kind of approach. We'll see it as, you know, this whole business, like, this points out the difference between, you know, who gets health care. No. They were very aggressive. You're not going to be that aggressive with the average case. I'll admit that. But there can easily be a time when everybody gets this kind of treatment. We're on our way to that in this country, in my humble opinion.
Well, what about people of color who deny these treatments?
Everybody will get it.
What if you're gay? And we won't give you steroids. Well, see, to me, I'm interested in Drew because all I heard was he's on oxygen. That's a big deal. But now that you picture everyone getting oxygen when they just lay down in the hospital bed, then you realize that was over.
They didn't know to ask high flow, positive pressure, CAT scan, chest X-ray.
Here's kind of my thing in my new world order. Did they not know to ask, or is it just sort of better just to go, he was on oxygen?
I can tell you by virtue of the way I have to study what press says about medical stories, they don't know what the hell they're talking about. always when it comes to medicine.
Right,
especially.
But what I'm saying is just take this nasty sounding thing and run with it.
Well,
I'm not
gratified
saying
doing
there's
it.
A way to probably there's a. You're a news anchor. You're not a medical expert. You have access to medical experts like I have access to you. And so then I've learned this information. It seems like they could learn that information if, in fact, that's what their goal was. All right. Is it Celine?
That's right.
Line two. Celine?
Hi.
Hi. Hey, Celine, I found your bottle with the note in it.
Yes.
Message in a bottle.
That's right.
Now, to be fair, I found it in almost real time. I just saw her throw it into the ocean, and she walked away, and it washed up. It didn't get across the globe. It just kind of came back.
No.
So I picked it up, decided to figure out what was going on. How old are you, Celine?
I'm 26 years old.
Why? So
where was it thrown from? Did you establish that?
In Malibu.
Okay, so not very far at all.
Why the message in the bottle? What prompted you to do that?
You know, just trying to let go of negative energy in this crazy world right now that we're living in, just the COVID world, you know, and losing myself almost, and just kind of wanting to just release any negative energy and just finding myself again, I think.
Did it help? Did you feel the release
honestly,
of negative energy?
Yes, it was instant gratification almost.
Really?
Hmm. And yeah. So
you went down with that intent to put the message in the bottle.
You
put your phone number in there. That's not something you typically see on Gilligan's Island when the bottle would wash up.
Right.
Why did you put your phone number on there?
I don't know. Because my intent, honestly, I didn't even think anybody was going to really find it. I thought it was just going to go far away. No one's ever going to find it. And I just thought, you know what? I always see this in movies kind of thing, or just hear about it in stories. And I was like, I want to see if anybody would really just call me or anything. And it's just kind of more like if someone going through a hard time as well or anything, I wanted to see if anybody would contact me. And look at now, I'm on a podcast.
What city do you live in?
I live in Rohnert Park, California. So it's in Sonoma County.
Yeah, Rohnert Park.
Oh, Brian knows.
It's up by Santa Rosa, Petaluma.
Yes, yes.
And so you came down, you're going to the beach, you put the message in a bottle, you threw it, you felt a purge, a release of stress.
And
what, you're 26 years of age, do you have a job, or has the COVID thing affected that?
Well, no. So I am a stay-at-home mom. I have two kids, which are 2 and 1. Mm. So that alone is just so much stress, and just always, you know, I'm a stay-at-home mom, and then just this whole COVID world is just kind of very overwhelming, I feel, and just going through everyday life situations in relationships, or just being a mom, being a daughter, being a sister, you know.
Does your husband work? Has he been affected?
Yes, he works. No, he has not been affected because he is an essential worker.
what business is he in?
He is a police officer.
Oh, nice.
Now,
his life must be stressful now.
He must feel a lot of that stress.
Yes, I think so, too, right now, just with the whole police situations and all that. Well, so, I think it is very stressful.
On top of that, there's a lot of fires up there, Celine. I don't know if the fires are close to where you guys are, but that's a huge source of stress, too.
So today, I finally get to see a blue sky today, which is amazing. I haven't got to see one in a while, and it's crazy because it's been very smoky, very just, you know, overwhelming.
Do you feel, I'll speak on behalf of young Celine, I have this theory that there's just too much information going around. People are just being mired in information and news, and some's real and some's fake. It's all just kind of chipping away at us a little bit. We need, like, to go out and build a fort. We need to go throw a bottle at the beach. And, like, we got to get ourselves. I feel like people are turning on themselves. Like, there's a lot of we're not supposed to be questioning our existence this much. You know, we're not supposed to be thinking about
constantly.
Well, what we're supposed to be thinking about is, like, work and kids and life, but we're not supposed to be questioning, like, what am I here for? Am I happy? Am I sad? What mood am I in this morning? What's going on with me? We need a little more of a, unfortunately, like, man and woman, without a schedule, it doesn't really work just being left your own devices. Mm-hmm. Most of us just sort of end up chewing on our own thigh like a dog that just sort of, like, we just need that engagement. And so when you pull the plug on life, which we kind of did, and then you pull the plug on life, but then you plug in information, phones and computers and TVs, like a constant barrage of news,
social media.
News and social media, then of course the effect is everyone's sitting around going, am I hungry? Am I horny? Am I tired? Am I smart?
Do I kill myself?
Dumb? Am I tall? Am I short? What am I doing here? Why? What's everyone else doing here? Eddie Van Halen died. What's going on?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean.
Yes. Can you, as a young mom, can you unplug? Like, can you take the kids outside and just have a nothing kind of moments of nothing?
I've been trying to disconnect, I kind of put my phone down. I'm kind of like, I try to be as in tune as possible with my emotions and just be present.
Who was holding you back? A lot in your note was talking about fuck everybody, they're taking my energy.
Yeah.
What's going on there?
Yeah, it was just kind of, I felt like I was kind of giving myself to a lot, like, not that it's a bad thing to give yourself all to your kids, but just kind of a lot of my energy goes into my kids. A lot of to being in a relationship. And always, I've always felt like I've always kind of been like a caregiver almost. Mm. And I kind of almost lost myself almost in a sense. Like, I just felt like I used to always be like so fearless and just been spontaneous and just like done whatever I always wanted to do, kind of. And I just felt like I lost myself, and I just wanted to get back to being happy again, taking care of myself.
Well, you have to wait till your kids are 18 before that happens. Because moms always complain about this. This is, in fact, what happens. Your kid sucks the life out of you. This is a very common complaint. You have to be careful that you do take care of yourself, so you're, you know, sort of refueled to be available for your kids.
What I felt.
Do you have a wish for me in your note? Because I could frame it. I could light a cigar with it. What would you like me to do?
I want you to frame it.
Frame it. All right.
And take a picture with it.
In the studio bathroom.
Remember the self-esteem talk we had a couple hours ago?
Yeah. Sam. You know, the thing that...
Yeah.
So I got to tell you what was funny. I was... This note was discovered a couple of weeks ago when I was walking down the beach in Malibu with my friend Matt DeAndrea. And we ended up back at the Malibu condo. And I was dying to see what was on the note. I thought it was going to be a recipe for life. I was dying to know what was in this note, but the note was in a wine bottle, and there wasn't a good way to fish it out. And it has a, you know, 4-inch neck on it. And the note wasn't falling out of the bottle. It was stuck in the body of the bottle. Matt's a handy guy. And so I actually had to go somewhere, as I recall, and I left him at the condo. So I just went, you figure out how to fish it out. I'm leaving, lock up. And I left. Then when I showed up yesterday at the condo, it had been 2 weeks, and I'd forgotten the bottle was gone, and I'd forgotten all about the note. And I walk to the island in the condo, and I look down, and I just see this thing that looks like feminine riding. And it says, I just want to go. Sorry. I just want to let go.
You assumed it was Matt's suicide.
Of who I was trying to make. And all I did was like, oh, Christ, my sister's having a nervous fucking breakdown. Like, someone got in here and left one of those notes that guys hate to read. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, any, yes.
Any dude who's been around the block has seen that chick writing note about how you make them feel.
Yes.
I feel invisible in front of you. And I'm like, ah.
Adam's an asshole note.
I'm going to have to get a fucking shaman in here to burn some sage and clear this condo now because of your weird vibes. So I start reading this note and I'm like, okay, this is my fucking sister, or this is Lynette, or this is my mom. And I'm reading down. I'm like, who the fuck wrote this? Whose note is this?
Natalia Carolla.
That's right. That's what I it clearly looked like it was left out for me. Mm-hmm. And then I'd realize, this was the note in the bottle. And now here we are today.
Celine, you can't just throw a wine bottle into the surf and have it go out to sea. How many times did it come back and you threw it back out there?
Well, they say if it comes back, you set it free.
Just one time.
Oh, well, wow.
She was there for 3 days throwing a damn bottle.
Yeah.
Yeah, I threw it at one time and look who found it, you know?
All right. Well, we're going to now.
It's a big riptide where she threw it or something.
Empower you to go off and lead your best life. Although I must say, almost everyone who says, I'm tired of doing everything for everyone, no more, I'm going to focus on me, always assholes that never do anything for anybody, ironically. That's my history. That's
let's
my history with
Celine.
Those people.
I promise you,
let's check in
me.
With Celine in a year.
Yes. We're going to check in, Celine.
Let's talk to Celine's husband.
All right.
Let's see what his version is.
Well, he's walking the beat right now. And by that, I mean in the bathroom taking care of business.
I am so happy, and I just want to let people know, you know, you're not allowed, and you got this.
Good. So take care of those kids.
Yes.
Take care of yourself. Probably wait till after the election to talk to your husband about how stressful things are at home, because he's probably stressed out at work.
Maybe a couple of weeks after the election.
Yeah. That's right. And then... And we'll check back in with you in a year from now.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah. That'd be awesome.
Thanks, Celine.
Nice.
Good luck, Celine.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
That's
a message in a bottle.
Went wild.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, you guys know that feeling of dread I had with the chick writing and the note going, here's how you make me feel. And I was like, okay, no.
I've been meaning to talk to you about this.
And you're like, did I walk into an intervention?
The modern version of that is getting a long text message from a girl now.
Yes.
If you look at your phone and there's a long text.
Yes. It's never a punch list for, like, if you're going to be at Anawalt Lumber, you want to pick up a 3/8 lock washer and then a zinc-coated half-inch washer with a broad rim on it and get finish washers. Now, in terms of lags, and Deckers, like, it's always a big pile of blah. I'm just gonna vomit feelings all over your fucking phone.
But it's one thing if you're just there to hear the feelings, like Celine was. The letter you're talking about is one where this is how you make me feel. I need you to hear this because you're the source of all this.
But you really have to just picture me alone in a condo with this note presented in chick writing, and I have zero context because all I did was. Matt, 2 weeks ago, had this bottle. I was like, have fun with the note. And I just left. I'd completely forgotten all about it.
I am certain you were like,
who wrote this? I'm glad that guys have the universal dread over that. All right. Let me hit red cap here. Yeah. Comfort done right. Making workwear and uniforms since 1923 for essential workers. Making our communities thrive. Clothing for many different industries. Automotive, culinary, manufacturing, waste management. Oil block coveralls resist the engine fluids. If they're if you're changing that, you get a little on yourself, no problemo. The oil just beads up and rolls off. Their latest project is for what they call road heroes, truckers, man. Truckers, the trucker tab, a $50,000 tab at Cracker Barrel to feed our long-haul truckers. You can check out truckertab.com. You know, these guys Yeah, everyone always talks about the nurses and the people, the first responders and the people working at the hospitals and the people working at the Trader Joe's. But what about the people hauling all that stuff everywhere in parts unknown? These are the truckers. You can donate, too. I did it myself. Go to truckertab.com and donate. Red Cap, work where done right. All right, let's see. We're going to have Martin Cove is going to be in a couple of few. We got our, oh, I don't know. I'll tell you my Mike August story because it'll make Drew and it'll make.
I'm ready.
It'll make Brian laugh, which is. Now, we've all had Mike August type conversations with Mike August. Like, they're very Mike August. You've had Mike August emails, Drew?
Emails, I was going to say.
I've had Mike August emails are. They're incredibly efficient, maximum 7 words, maximum, but usually impenetrable.
Well, they say brevity is the soul of confusion. So
I appreciate Mike, the efficiency, though.
Mike sends super confusing emails, but we also have super confusing conversations. And this was a classic Mike August conversation, classic, because Mike is a nice guy. But he's got a little bit of a nasty streak. And once he gets onto something, he's the kind of guy who hunkers down on it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think the president may have this, it's the kind of, you know, the people you argue with and
Mike's an attorney.
You can kind of show them the light and they'll suck down a little harder on their first point just to really bring it home.
Yep.
You don't have that, Drew.
Nope.
But Mike does.
I used to, though.
Probably. But Mike doesn't.
You beat it out of him.
Mike does. Yeah. We're sitting on Gergis's
conditioned.
We're sitting on Gergis's private jet, and we're flying home from Salt Lake City. And as we fly, we're looking out the window. And by the way, boy, you talk about, you know, hey, is there room in this country? Between Salt Lake City and Simi Valley, or you know, I'm trying to think, Newhall Saugus, or flying into L.A., there is nothing.
Yeah.
There is not a structure between literally Salt Lake City, at least the way we flew, Salt Lake City to Los Angeles. You look down. It is just there's nothing there. Yeah, there's not a building.
Except one or two round green.
Yeah, a couple of those.
What is
and
that?
Like one solar farm or whatever. Yeah. But there is physically nothing. Like when they go, we don't have room in this country. We're overcrowded. Oh, my God, boy.
Oh, yeah.
So wide open.
I wrote a stat a few years ago that only 3% of this country is urbanized.
Yeah, it's
like
not
only
right.
3% is cities. You know what I mean? It's rural or it's country or whatever.
Yeah, that's about right.
You fly in a private jet and you just stare out that window and there was nothing between here and there.
It's
and
desert.
At some point we started coming up on the Colorado River and then we started coming up on
Hoover Dam.
And I said, you know, Hoover Dam, I said, we shot the cold opening to the Man Show on Hoover Dam. And I said, way back when Hal Gurney was the famous director for Letterman, way back in the early days of Letterman, very early days when Dave would say, Hal, how much time we got? Or Hal, who's coming in next? Or Hal, that was Hal Gurney, famous. And we brought him in, and he directed some Man shows. And he's a lovely man. Lovely man. And he's older. And he was old when we were doing the pilot for the Man Show. And he's a gentleman, a woodworker, a great soul. And I said, geez, is Hal Gurney, he directed the first episode. Is he still around? And Mike did not miss a beat. Mike said, no, he's dead. And I said, Hal Gurney's dead. Yeah, he's dead. I said, how? You know, Hal Gurney was a friend and a good friend and a good friend of Danny Two Sheets and Jimmy. And I feel like Jimmy and Danny Two Sheets would have told me immediately. I would have been in on a long text thread about Hal Gurney.
Particularly if he died of COVID.
It just died.
Yeah.
It could have died 2 years ago. Yeah. I felt like I would have known about it.
Yeah.
So I said, is he dead? Now, we don't have any reception in the air, so we don't know what's going on. And Mike goes, oh, yeah, he's dead. And I said, did you hear he was dead? Now, I'm curious because you heard he was dead. I worked with him. I didn't hear he was dead. How come Daniel didn't tell me he was dead? Where did you find out he's dead? He went, When he did the Man Show pilot, he was like 75 years old. That would make him 95. Like, he's dead. And I said, okay, hold on. He's dead because you think he's dead, or he's dead because you heard he's dead? He's dead! Mm-hmm. I go, okay, he's... But there's such a thing as him being old and alive.
Yes, there's such a thing.
Yeah, right. He's dead. Believe me, he's dead. I go, okay, please. I just want to try to get some clarity. Did you hear that Hal Gurney had died, or are you just telling me he's dead because he's too old to be alive? And he goes, it took a long time, didn't it, Chris? It took a long time.
You guys time were going for a while.
we did about 400 nautical miles. And I go, look, Norman Lear is old. Mm-hmm. Norman Lear is 96 years old, but he's alive, but he's very old. But he is alive. Is Hal Gurney dead? Or is he because you heard he died? Or are you just telling me he's dead because you've done the math? He'd be 100 years old. But he won't stop and correct. So eventually, I pound it out of him, which is he never heard he died.
Right.
He's telling me doing he died math. Because he's doing the math, which he toggled back and forth on. And I said, but we don't know it. Right? And he's like, I know it. He's dead. Anyway, got home.
Hit the tarmac. As soon as you hit the tarmac, I'm
Hal Gurney,
on the phone.
85 years young and going strong.
Yeah.
So thank God we had a 40-minute conversation, right?
It went on way too
could
long.
Have just said, I don't know. Right?
That he could have easily said that. He says it with such conviction, and that's how he gets
I have him. Learned.
For long, he had a lot I of conviction learned. For a long period of time. And my conviction was, he's definitely old. But my circle would have informed me if Hal Gurney died.
Advice to all y'all. I've been with this man longer than any of you all combined. If you're certain, make sure you are certain. Do not do anything with certitude unless you are really, like you just read it before you got on the plane.
Yeah, well, anyway, the great Hal Gurney is still walking amongst us.
May rest in peace.
May rest in peace. All right, let me hit my hitting blinds here, Max Pata. Blinds galore. First place to go for custom blinds, shades, shutters, and drapes online. Family owned and run for 20 years plus.
Great
Drew
people.
Gets
yep,
all his stuff
I do.
There.
Love them.
I get all my stuff there. They've covered over 2 million windows. And you can do it all from your home. You take the measurements, you customize them online. They have a build a blind tool, shows you exactly how your blind and shades are going to look on the screen before you buy. Save a ton compared to big box stores. Get the designer look without the designer price tag. Stuff is nice. It works. It keeps the heat out, especially in these hot climates. Mm. And it helps keep the heat in when it gets cold outside. Hand-built from scratch, delivered right to your door, and created just for your windows. And, again, you can hook them up to your Amazon Alexa device as well, so you can be smart. You can charge it up and down automatically. I have them in my bedroom. I have them everywhere. It's Blinds Galore, right, Dawson?
Blinds Galore makes it easy for you to get the safe, high-quality designer blinds and shades you've always wanted in your home, all at a great price, all at up to 45% off. See for yourself at BlindsGalore.com today and let them know that Adam sent you. That's BlindsGalore.com.
All right, Dr. Drew, the Dr. Drew and the Adam and Dr. Drew show available on Apple Podcasts as well, DrDrew.com mm-hmm. for more podcasts
YouTube,
and information,
YouTube.
And live streams as well.
Yep.
YouTube, we're going to be, Drew's going to be the guest at the Cajun Dome in Lafayette coming up October 24th, so enjoy that as well. We'll take a break. I'll dismiss Drew, and the great Martin Cove will be in right after this.
In the spirit of Murrow, Jennings, Cronkite, here's another great moment. In local news,
a man's death is being blamed on black licorice. Yes, the 54-year-old Massachusetts construction worker was reportedly eating a bag and a half of the candy every day for a few weeks. Doctors say an acid found in black licorice threw off his nutrients, causing his heart to stop. And the FDA warns as little as 2 ounces a day for 2 weeks can cause a heart rhythm problem. Doctors hope it raises awareness.
That is bizarre.
It really bizarre.
I don't have to worry about that. I'm not really a fan of licorice. Right? You
You'll
too?
Me both.
Yeah.
That's a great moment in local news. Now, back to the Adam Carolla Show
Well, welcome back to the show, Martin Cove, Cobra Kai, the TV show. It's available now on Netflix, renewed for a fourth season. By the way, dominated Nielsen's streaming charts at the end of August with nearly 2.2 billion, billion with a B, streaming minutes. So congratulations. And the word of mouth, is it all word of mouth, Martin?
Well, it's all word of mouth. It's all word of mouth until you see it. Then you see why the word of mouth is so strong. You know, it's just, they haven't been doing a lot of press except some promos. But, you know, Netflix, they literally dubbed it in 38 languages. They had 199 million viewers, which translates to about 3-4 people in per family in a house. So it's 400 million viewers to a show that was aired on YouTube, you know, a couple of years ago. And it still holds its own, you know?
Well, the thing that's amazing about this new world order, which is, first off, there are no bad ideas just on their face. Like when you hear Cobra Kai, we're going to reboot the whole Karate Kid thing. It sounded a little insane, but if the product is there, the product is there. And if the product is great, then people watch it and people share it. And you can't buy that. And it's always funny when people say to me, like, I want to do a video and I want it to go viral. It's like, it can't go viral. You can just do the best video or the funniest video or the most interesting video you can do and hope people share it.
Yeah, you have to, right now it's an ideal time. So for a show that's about nostalgia, for a show that uses flashbacks about nostalgia, it's a time when we all need to feel good. All that, and the fact that we went from YouTube to Netflix, who do, you know, a lot more promotion and have a lot more viewers, all that worked into the success of the show. But without good writing, without your little video, your video, and without the good writing of anything, the Karate Kid 1, 2, or 3, we don't have it. We're still saying lines like wax on, wax off, no mercy, sweep the leg, 35 years later. Like, we're still saying the force be with you. We're still saying play it again, Sam. We're still saying Frankie Scarlet, I don't give a damn, you know? Because the writing on those projects were superior. They were just wonderful.
I'm looking down at your TV credits. I'm seeing all these old shows like Kojak and Cagney and Lacey and Gunsmoke, and I'm looking at getting your start with Gentle Ben. Gentle Ben is a show I used to watch when I was a kid about a bear that lived with a young child, Clint Howard, Ron Howard's brother, in the Everglades. And Dennis Weaver from McLeod and Duel, I think, was like the game warden in the Everglades. And Gentle Ben was the friend of Clint Howard. Now, how old were you when you did that part?
That's the original Gentle Ben, and you have a very good memory because I watched that. Gentle Ben that you're talking about was a remake on Hallmark where they put me in as the person who raises the bear. It was like a Rambo character who lives in the woods.
Well, what year was that?
That would have been Gentle Ben, so it would have been 2001, 2002.
Oh, so got his start on Gentle Ben with Clint Howard is probably not accurate information.
No, I don't think so.
Because you would have been, I don't know, 16 and a half or something. If that.
But it's a good credit because it brings me back to the days when that show that you watched and when I watched on Gunsmoke. Mm-hmm. When I came into Hollywood the first year I was in Hollywood, I got a chance to work with James Arness and I guest starred on Gunsmoke, David Huddlestone, and it was a gas. And, you know, it was just about 4 years after I did my first bit part as a speaking in a movie called Little Murders, directed by Alan Arkin. And it got cut out of the movie, but it was so much fun that you know, it turned me on to wanting to come to Hollywood 3 years later.
I got to warn you that according to Wikipedia, the first line is that you appear in the Gentle Ben series, which ran from 67 to 1969 on CBS with Clint Howard. So we're going to have to get your publicist to go back and clean thing up.
Wikipedia. They have me too old in IMDb. So we got to do both Wikipedia and IMDb.
Got to fix that shit, man.
Did you have? Oh, this is a stupid question. Could you have foreseen this whole Karate Kid being what it was when it was? Like, it's such a in many ways, it's such a small movie. The original Karate Kid. It really is a small movie. I don't mean that. Pejorative way. I just mean it's a small little story. It's kind of a local thing, you know. It's all the All Valley tournament. It's in the San Fernando Valley. It's not a big movie at the time. Wasn't filled with big stars. Did you see it coming? Did you film it and then sort of forget about it? And it came out a year later. How did that work?
Yeah, that was kind of it. We never even liked the Karate Kid. Title. It felt like a Bruce Lee movie. I treated it like just another heavy.
Mm-hmm.
I remember just a few directions from John Avildsen saying, "Don't give me the Marty Cope twinkle. I want this guy John Kreese like death."
Right.
You know? That's what he kept telling me to think about. And, you know, as time progressed, I never felt that the stars were Ralph and Pat. I felt the star was Robert Mark Kamen, who wrote it, who wrote this wax on, wax off, integrated so much. And to me, all the top movies that we love are all based on good writing, all based on good writing. Despite the chemistry, back in those days, I was arrogant enough to think, well, if I did a little movie, but I love the part, but the script is not great, I can embellish it and make it terrific. And of course, we all know you can't. You don't have it on the page, it's not going to, no matter how good the performances are, it's not going to improve. Karate Kid was just something that everybody identified with, whether they were bullied, whether they were fish out of water, or whether they had a romance that didn't work out. You know, it just penetrated everyone's soul. And as the years went by, it was shown a lot on cable, and once it hit, the writing, again, was so rich and so gray. But today, white hats and black hats, like the Karate Kid movies, are not popular. It is the gray. It's the gray elements in a script that the kids identify with. You know,
Brian?
You know who else agrees with you about it's got to be on the page? The great Bob Evans, producer Bob Evans.
You can have stars up the ass, but if it's not on the page, it's not going to be on the screen.
So you're right about that, as according to Mr. Evans. But I did have a question for you. I'm glad you brought up John Avildsen.
Mike August says he's still alive. Go ahead. Go ahead.
That's fair. I'm glad you mentioned John Avildsen because Adam's production company distributed the documentary King of the Underdogs, which you were in, about John Avildsen. And it was great. I enjoyed it so much because he's a great director and eye-opening. I didn't know a lot about him. Would you mind just talking about your experiences with him? I mean, whatever you want, casting or on the set. I'm just curious what he was like to work with.
He did Rocky. Did he direct Rocky as well?
He did direct Rocky, yes.
Sorry, go
ahead. Rocky and Joe.
Right.
And so I probably didn't tell you the story. So I get the script, Karate Kid script, and I get it on a Monday from this woman, Carol Jones. She said, "You have all week with it. We're going to bring you in on Friday to meet with John Avildsen." So this is 1983. I'm doing Cagney and Lacey. I said, "Oh, I read it over. It's just another heavy." Then she calls me first thing in the morning, Tuesday morning, and says, "You've got to be at 12 o'clock. John's shooting the scene. They've already started shooting. He's shooting the movie. It's now or never." I'm viciously just so angry. So my wife says to me, "Use the venom you're feeling." And the scene was marching up and down the dojo. It's mercy is for the weak. Here and on the street, someone confronts you, blah, blah, blah. So I use it all. And then I go into the audition to meet Carol Jones and John. And I look at John and I say, "John, you're a real asshole. We wait for years to meet directors of your caliber. And now you give me any time to practice and develop this role. You're a real asshole. And so are you, Caro Jones. Mercy is for the weak. Here and on the streets. I go right into it. He loves it. Sends me to Jerry Weintraub. Do the same thing to Jerry Weintraub. I berate him. I don't give a shit. Just berate him. He stops me halfway through it. He says, loves me. Sends me to Guy McElwain, the head of the studio. I couldn't quite do it to Guy McElwain, but I did it in the bathroom and then came out with the same kind of emotions, you know? But John was a great guy. You just hang with him. He lived with a camera on his shoulder. You know, he just videoed everything. And when we did that video that Billy Zabka directed, the one about the pizza boy and all, John was there with a video camera at the red carpet, red carpeting everybody, you know, with his video. He was a great guy. I spoke at the memorial, and he's truly missed. He's truly missed.
You know what I think back on, and I was just thinking about it. So I grew up in the San Fernando Valley. I guess they moved to Reseda or some place like that. I think when they moved out, as far as the storyline, you can look it up, Chris. I think the storyline is they
Reseda.
Yeah. So Reseda's a couple of towns or cities over from where I grew up in North Hollywood. And what a lot of people don't know is that the Gardners in the 50s, the 60s, and even into the early 70s were Japanese. In the San Fernando Valley in Los Angeles, the Gardners were Japanese. My grandparents had Mr. Otaki. He was a Japanese gardener. Like, it seems insane when you live in Southern California now to picture a Japanese guy pulling up in a pickup truck and getting out and raking the leaves and being the gardener. But the Japanese in California, or maybe in Los Angeles, were the gardeners of the day. And I now sort of realize, as I was thinking about Mr. Miyagi, like, was that a San Fernando Valley Japanese gardener sort of carryover? Like, was that his job? Because that was a prominent job for the Japanese in SoCal back in the day.
He was a handyman,
but he worked, but obviously he was doing all that stuff. He was doing all the bonsai stuff and all that stuff back at his place, right? Wasn't he? At least in Karate Kid 2 or 3, was he doing the bonsai thing?
He had the bonsai tree.
Yeah, he
was the bonsai tree and he was the handyman. But, you know, every one of those places had some little maintenance man that took care of you, you know, in those little complexes. And most of the time they were Oriental, because now a lot of gardeners are Mexican gardener, and always did have a Mexican. Even when I lived in Santa Clarita, you know, yeah, they were. The transition, you know, began about 10 years ago, 20 years ago, because now every gardener I've ever had, even if I got rid of him, was not an Oriental.
Yeah, that's, again, I just had these weird little flashbacks of Mr. Otaki,
right.
Like wearing a pith helmet, you know, like wearing a gardener's uniform, literally. Like, remember people would wear a uniform for, like, if you were a gardener.
Wide-brimmed.
Yeah, you didn't show up in sweatpants and flip-flops, man. You had your stuff on. And it was kind of interesting because I learned this lesson when I was a carpenter, which is taking this thing that you feel like is sort of manual labor and kind of boring and raking leaves and trimming back hedges and stuff, but turning it into a little bit of a professional science. Like these guys had they were sort of meticulous, like their shirts were tucked in, they had their little holster with their clippers on it and stuff. And there seemed to be this pride in it versus sort of cranking it out, like see how many houses we can hit in a day. And he seemed sort of content. Do you know what I mean? Like there was some sort of precision in this. Like it was Mr. Miyagi working on a bonsai tree. Was it was it two or three where he was going to plant the or get the bonsai tree off the side of the cliff?
That was three.
That was three.
With Mike Barnes and all that. But I think that the word is when they had a uniform on, any one of these people, whether they were moving men or they were, I flash back now on some of these commercials where they come in as appliance fixing your washer mm-hmm. or your dryer. They always had the integrity of a uniform.
Mm-hmm.
And I think all these people truly enjoyed that. They enjoyed that. When you see even a good war movie, which is the antithesis of you know, plants and being a gardener, but that outfit. Well, I just watched Black Hawk Down, mm-hmm. and because Tom Sizemore and I are planning a project together, oddly enough, Black Hawk Down came on that night, and you know, everybody was quite fastidious in their outfits, and when you look at even the Civil War. They changed them around so much, but the Civil War movies, you know, the officers are quite fastidious. And I think there's a great deal of pride in wearing a uniform.
I agree. Like, I'm not who you would, you wouldn't think I'd be a school uniform guy, but I kind of am a school uniform guy. Like, I think you kind of act the part. And I think, like, I look at the same way as, like, people used to dress to fly, and now they don't dress to fly, and they try to choke flight attendants who tell them to put out their vape pens or whatever. And I think there's a correlation. Black Hawk Down, by the way, one of our favorite and Brian's favorite war movie of all time, maybe, right, Love Brian?
It. Yeah, no, it was my number one. Was that the first time you'd seen it, Martin?
No, I'd seen it before, but, you know, it just was interesting. We had a three-hour meeting about a Western at the house. And we were just smoking cigars, talking. He left. I put on the TV. This was Tuesday, Wednesday last week, or Thursday last week. And then it was Black Hawk Down. And I was like, well, how interesting it is. Tom just left. Let's just throw it on and watch it. But, you know, you guys were so kind to my son who did this other movie about pretty much, you know, war. He did this movie called D-Day. And Weston Cage,
right.
He did it with Weston Cage, right. Nick's son. And you guys were so gracious to him. I put that as a note to thank you for being so gracious to him.
You're welcome. I'm reading here that according to the Los Angeles Times, at one time in Los Angeles, it was estimated that one in every four Japanese American men was a gardener. Can you imagine one?
That's crazy.
25% of Japanese American males who lived in Los Angeles were gardeners. Could you imagine that? It's such a crazy profession. And of all things, gardeners. You don't think about that. But it's kind of a good example of Japanese men going, I'm going to be a gardener. Fine. My son is going to be a doctor. And that's kind of what this country's about, I would say, on a patriotic note.
The greatest, the most difficult statistic to follow is that 1920 to 1967, one out of every three movies coming out of this town was a Western from 1920 to 67.
Wow.
That means it was such an overexposed genre that you wonder now why we don't see those kind of movies based on that statistic. In Cowboys and Indians magazine, you know?
Wait, sorry.
Sometimes I think statistics help us. Sometimes they hinder us, you know?
Getting back to Tom Sizemore, what kind of shape is Tom Sizemore in? Is he sober? Is he lucid? I've met a few different versions of Tom Sizemore.
No, he's lucid. He's sober. He's terrific. And, the project was a really interesting project written by Alexander Troy about the Trail of Tears problem back in 1876. And, you know, the tribes being moved from Nebraska to Oklahoma. And it was a wonderful political take that is a very good look that should be done. And, I've been trying to get some Westerns done for a long time, so... He came over and we just had some good conversations, very creative stuff with the writer. And and my son, and you know, we're going to end up making it. It's very exciting. And he was in great shape and, you know, very articulate. And Tom's good. He's good. Because I know him from some of those stories. Mm-hmm. You know, we did a couple autograph shows together.
Oh, boy. You know? I'm laughing because, you know, as someone who, you know, who's guilty of tilting a two now and again, if there's just settings. You know what I mean? And it's like, hey, if you got to go up on stage for 90 minutes and do stand up, you could have a couple of beers, but you can't be lit up. You just can't. You're going to have a hard time doing that. On the other hand, if you ever catch me on a long flight, that'll be a different version. And autograph session sounds like the kind of place you could you could be altered a little bit and still do your job.
Yeah, you could. You just sit there, you know, you just hang out. But he's great. You know, we had stories about, you know, coming up at the same times and doing, you know, he was very lucky to do some wonderful movies. I wish everybody out there on the planet could watch Save It and Private Ryan right now in this day and age. I would love to. I wish I had the time and the energy to send the DVD to everybody all over the place and watch for the sake of patriotism and for the sake of basically – you know, what our country was about back in 1944. And I think it's Spielberg's best work, best work. And I just watched it last week again.
I love that movie. It is one of the, I don't know, there's about 5 or 10 movies for me that if I run into them, I just watch the rest. It's that movie, Defending Your Life with Albert Brooks. I have a few of those movies where if I just land on it, I'll just stay with it. And, Saving Private Ryan is definitely one of those movies. The autograph circuit, the memorabilia, the autograph things are going. I know it's a big deal for like the sci-fi world and Comic-Con and stuff like that. Is it becoming a big deal for just all movies in all genres?
Yeah, you can do some interesting things in the horror world. I don't do that, you know. But there was a movie we did, Fred Williamson, Stephen Lang, David Patrick Kelly, William Sadler. We did this movie about, it's called VFW. And we did it because the camaraderie was so rich in the movie. It's about a VFW bar. But it was very bloody, horror movie. And the amount of attention it got in all these magazines, horror magazines, you know, autograph shows, it was incredible because neither one of us, any of us, do those kind of films. We just don't do those bloody movies. And I think Last House on the Left was the last time I did it, which was Wes Craven's first picture. Hmm. So that was 1972, you know, a lot of action because people want to be with some of their favorites. They want to go and have, shake a hand, take a picture with them. I think these 8x10 businesses are just passe, but the little picture they'll take with their phone, the smile they get from you, it makes a world of difference. And I'm still fascinated by it all. You know, I'm a little jaded when it comes to business and making deals and experiencing what's going on with Cobra Kai. I was there in the 80s, so I kind of go back and forth with jubilance and being jaded. But the bottom line is you can't beat a person's smile at those autograph shows when they really appreciate that you're alive.
I'll tease this one because I got to do a quick spot, but Rambo Part 2. I want to know all your recollections of that and how that came about and Stallone and whatever you got from Rambo Part 2. Now, Rambo Part 1, which was just First Blood, is just a kind of gritty, outdoorsy kind of adventure movie that doesn't really resemble the later ones. If people watch it, well, in a weird way, here, I'm going to tease this for you and Brian, Mr. Cove, because you're both encyclopedias of movie knowledge. What came further? So the first I'll tease it, but the first Rocky was, you know, pretty slow and gritty and kind of plotting, and it was a real character study. And then, of course, Rocky IV, Rocky V, you know, they became sort of a caricature of the original movie. But Rambo, First Blood, the first Rambo, First Blood, was another kind of gritty, kind of plotting, kind of character study that then turned into a bigger-than-life, you know, greased-up, shirt-off, you know, flaming arrow thing. Which one, which franchise traveled further from its original destination? I'll let you both argue that out in a second. First, let me tell you about Bet Online. Football is up and running. It's in full swing. NBA Finals are, well, you better get on that while you can, because there's not too many left. MLB playoffs are up and running, and you can still get in on the action at Bet Online. Raiders at Chiefs coming up this Sunday, Eagles at Steelers, Giants at Cowboys, Broncos, Patriots, Vikings at Seahawks, Dolphins at Brian's 49ers. More options to wager than anywhere online, from spreads to totals to props. You get in on season opening bonuses as well, and you can wager on division and championship futures as well. Head to BetOnline today. Take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Visit betonline.ag, our exclusive partner, Podcast One. And don't forget, promo code Podcast One for your sign-up bonus today. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. All right, Brian, why don't you go first? Thoughts on that challenge?
So both of these franchises have taken similar journeys, but to answer your specific question, Rambo by far is the most extensive journey. That was a cat and mouse in the woods movie on American soil about this. Like, basically, it was proxy for all Vietnam veterans, right? The guy was suffering from PTSD. He had to be talked down by his old colonel from, like, he was crying and talking about how bad the veterans had it. Like, it was kind of maudlin with, yes, like some violence sprinkled in. By the time you get to the more recent movies that are really just called Rambo, he is a killing machine, a mercenary sent almost all around the world to just slaughter indigenous people. And he's a cold-blooded killer. He just kills hundreds and thousands of people on screen. So these movies have gone, I think the Rambo movie is the answer, has gone the farthest.
Martin Cove, thoughts?
Well, Sly and I go back a long time. We had the same personal manager named Kuno Spoonholtz back in the early 70s. He would get Sly jobs in Baronet, at the Baronet Theater as an usher. He'd get me a job as a Santa Claus in Abraham and Strauss in Brooklyn.
Wow.
And we go back, you know, as far back as Capone, our first movie, 74, and basically, you know, I think we did that in Death Race 2000. And I remember being on the set of Death Race 2000. And I said, what do you got? We were in the motorhome. And he says, I got this red script. It's a boxing movie. I'm trying to get it made. And that was like 1975, February. And then sure enough, you know, the rest is history. And years later, I got in touch. You know, I guess I was hot off Karate Kid 1. And boom, I get this offer to come play Erickson and to play in this movie. And I loved First Blood 1. I mean, Brian Dennehy is a friend of mine. I think everybody did a great job. But, you know,
yeah,
I,
he was
Herbie
great.
Nannis, you know, and Herbie Nannis was Sly's manager and my manager at the time. And this was probably 83. And I said, I get this script. And it's all pink pages of mayhem. 84 pages of nothing but mayhem.
Sounds about right.
Sly had 9 lines. I had more words than he did. And I'm going through this thing in my dressing room at Cagney and Lacey. And I'm saying, you know, all I do is fly the helicopter. I shoot a couple of guns, blah, blah, blah. But I got to make this movie, because this movie is going to be another $100 million movie. I got to follow up Karate Kid with something good. Sure enough, I signed for it. We went down to Thailand. We had a terrific time. Sly and I got really friendly all over again. And he's a very creative guy, very funny character. And I'm so happy for him that he was able to get the Expendables going again, you know. But the bottom line is, it's a tough movie. And he and George Cosmatos literally, you know, George was under the thumb of Sly. And George did a great job on Tombstone, I think. But on this Rambo, it was what Sly wanted. Sly would see all the takes, you know. And it was a really terrific action picture that when I first saw it, my wife fell asleep. We're in Tom Laughlin's house in his screening room. Billy Jack. We played tennis at his house in the day. In the evening, we'd watch a movie, and we watched Rambo. And it was the first time I'd seen it. And my wife fell asleep.
Aren't enough explosions to keep her awake?
I just, how do you fall asleep watching Rambo? It was, you know.
My experience is if I put my wife in any room and shut the lights, she will fall asleep. If she was making an omelet in the kitchen and I just shut the light, she would fall asleep standing over an open flame.
Like one of those goats.
Women, I have noticed when women watch and you turn the lights off, you put them in a screening room, they just nod off. I know it sounds personal because you're in it. I just feel like that's a thing that's built into almost all women. And I would defend your wife by saying if people can fall asleep driving an automobile, they can fall asleep in front of Rambo too. But Tom Laughlin playing tennis with Tom Laughlin, that's something we got to talk about.
That was fun. He, you know, every Saturday there were people over the house, and he lived in Brentwood, and it was like he'd be the king. So you invite a lot of people. It wasn't just you invite four people to play, you know, doubles. He would invite like 10, 12, 14 people. And he'd walk around. Okay, Marty, you play. Charlie, you play. Val, you play. And you wanted to play and get up and do it. So it was like the coach, while everybody's waiting on the bench, it was the coach choosing who was going to start. You know? And we had a great time because we all rotated. But, you know, it was sort of like Billy Jack. He ran it with an iron fist. You know, he ran the tennis games with an iron fist. And then, of course, he went to this. It was like a log cabin out of Montana. And you went to his screening room and you watched a good movie every, you know, when it was always Saturday night. So this one was Rambo.
Wow.
But then again, I have to, my girlfriend, present girlfriend now, still very good friends with my ex-wife, but my girlfriend now, on our first date, she had a screening room out in the suburbs, and we watched Casablanca, my favorite movie of all time. And she fell asleep in Casablanca.
Outrageous.
Maybe it's some pheromone that you exude that actually just knocks out your opponents like you would do with your fists in all those action movies. Wow, Tom Laughlin from Born Losers to Billy Jack. You want to talk about spinning things off. There was Billy Jack, and then there was the trial of Billy Jack, and then Billy Jack goes to Washington, and maybe, I don't know if there was three, there may have been a fourth Billy Jack. I can't even recall, but we were looking at Billy Jack the other day. You know, that thing cost, I don't know, $850,000 to make and pulled down like $40 million. The first one, I mean, that must have bought him that house in Brentwood, right?
Well, remember what he did. He took it back from Warner Brothers and he four-walled it, which means he went around to the different theater chains and sold them that this movie is saleable. This movie can make some bucks. And he did that all over the country. And that was the first one of $40 million. He, you know, probably sequels always make me $20, $30 million more. So he had three, four of them, and did very well for himself.
He bought it back from the film company after shooting it?
He got it back on some deal. He got it back. I don't know how much money exchanged. Probably got to give them some bread. But it didn't do well. So he said, let me do it. They called it four-walling at the time. And let me go to the independent theater owners. I'll get this thing in profit. And he told us that story. And it was a mensch. The guy was a mensch. You know, he was a terrific guy. I was so sorry to see him, you know, just fade away, and he was in a wheelchair and then he passed away. But he was a solid guy. Good. And it was a good. The one movie that was a bizarre movie was The Master Gunfighter. I don't know if you ever saw that, but it was like he was a gunfighter, but he had carried samurai swords. It was true bastardization of any genre we know, you know. But it was fun. It was a fun movie.
Do you remember some of the characters or celebrities that may have shown up at Tom Laughlin's tennis parties back in the day?
Lyle Wagner.
Lyle Wagner.
He used to be on Wonder Woman.
Yes.
He was there all the time. God. Ooh, who else was there?
Lyle Wagner was... Lyle Wagner was Wonder Woman's sort of boyfriend, and also right. I think was Carol Burnett. He was the he just played the good looking slab of man meat on Carol Burnett. Whenever they needed a good looking guy to come in, that was Lyle Wagner, right?
Yes, absolutely. I mean that was, you know, that was far better than the Wonder Woman stuff. That was, you know, that was true comedy back in those days. And what she did and all, just brilliant.
So,
he's lucky to experience both ends of the spectrum. A typical TV, you know, a TV hit about Wonder Woman and superheroes. But to start out on live television like that, that's what I wish I could have done that. God.
Do you remember?
I would have liked to have been born in about 1910. So I could have done all the pirate. By the time 1930 came, I could have done all the pirate movies and all the westerns I wanted to do in the 30s and 40s, you know.
Do you remember any other names from back then, the Tom Laughlin tennis parties?
Yeah, let's see. Kathy, she did a very athletic video. Yeah, it was a lot of them. This goes back to the late 70s. I'm trying to think.
Catherine Ross was the mom from Happy Days, right?
Catherine Ross. No, Catherine, mom from Happy Days. No, that was something Ross.
Oh, it wasn't Catherine Ross.
Catherine Ross was the graduate.
Oh, okay. So now I'm dating myself.
Sam Elliott's wife.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to think.
Marion Ross was Happy Days. Damn it.
Marion Ross.
There
yeah.
you go.
But there was, Scott, it was several of us that would show up there. A couple of the Bridges boys would show up there.
Ah, and, the Bridges, yeah.
And there was a couple of these young starlets that I haven't seen in a long time.
I bet you they know, haven't was, changed a bit.
Yeah.
All right, Martin, let me give you a plug for before we let you go. Obviously, Cobra Kai is the name of the show. It's available on Netflix, and third season is scheduled to release January 2021, so just around the corner. And you can shoot him a tweet at Martin Cove, K-O-V-E, if you like, as well. Hey, Martin, thanks for joining us. I hope we can see in person soon.
Tell me what you want to have happen in season four. Are you up on, you know, we start season four January 18th. Well, you haven't seen season three yet, so you really can't answer that question. What do you want to see happen in season three?
Well, gender reassignment.
I'm going to say for sure no mercy. And no, I'm not caught up, so I don't have any specifics, but I would say I would go with gender reassignment with Brian. more perfect. Crease, more crease is what I that's what I'd like to say.
Give crease a crease.
Right. Thanks, Martin.
Take care of yourself. It's been a lot of fun.
Always a pleasure. All right, let me hit Albert, and then we'll do the news with Dawson sitting in this time. Finance apps lack humanity. Albert combines real human guidance with proven technology so you can stay in control. Amazing, easy to use app has three main features. Albert Genius accesses real financial advisors so you can message anytime through the app if you like. Albert Savings, which tracks your income and spending so to find money you can be saving without disrupting your cash flow. Albert users save an average of $400 in just 6 months. So if that sounds good, get on it. Albert Instant, it's a cash advance up to $100 straight to your bank account to tide you over if you need it. No credit check, zero interest, and no late fees. Albert, Right, Dawson?
Install Albert from the App Store or Google Play today to find your happy balance and get a bonus of up to $40 when you start an annual subscription to Albert Genius.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back, do the news with Dawson and Bald, and we'll do that right after this.
Hey, movie lovers. Who needs a theater when you have Pluto TV? Grab your popcorn and your streaming device because free movies are here. Pluto TV is your home for movies. Great movies are playing anytime in over 20 exclusive movie channels of action, horror, rom-coms, and more. Watch hits like Saving Private Ryan, Pretty in Pink, and Charlie's Angels all for free. No signups, no fees, no contracts. Ever. Download the free Pluto TV app on any device.